Good evening. I'm going to start my lesson like I start all of them. I had a conversation at work the other day. Surprise. And so I was talking to a friend that actually he's also a part-time Pentecostal preacher. And we started talking about miraculous healing. And I don't know about you all, but I'm getting a little bit older in life. And if you make a statement these days like relating to religion, I'm going to call you on it if you make a statement. And we should also be held accountable in the same way. If somebody asks us a question or is like, why do you believe this? We should be able and want to back it up. So 1 John 4 says, "Dear friends, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits to see whether they are from God. Because many false prophets have gone out into the world, but every spirit that does not acknowledge Jesus is not from God." So, anyway, my coworker, he made a statement that I thought we would take a quick look at tonight. He said that the powers that the apostles had back in those days are still available for us today, or at least some of us today. That, in other words, we have these gifts. All these gifts that they had at that time. So first of all, let's just ask the simple question of what is a miracle? It comes from the Latin term meaning object of wonder. They defied human logic and also revealed God's glorious wonder. In Greek, it means supernatural. So in other words, something beyond our natural laws and physics and capabilities. I had a woman once tell me that a baby being born was a miracle. I've had people tell me about slow-working miracles. In other words, ones that don't happen instantly, but takes a course of time. I even have co-workers at work. You know, somebody has a surgery or whatever, and they're like, well, that was a miracle how that came out, you know. But then they have to go to rehab for a month. So, and I'm even guilty myself of calling things miracles, you know, when somebody may have almost got hit by a car and you're like, boy, that was a miracle they got out of that. And so basically we have reduced this special happening sometimes to just an ordinary thing. So let's look at some miracles connected with the apostles in the New Testament. And of course, we know they had several different gifts, but we're going to mostly look at healings. So let's read Acts chapter 5, from verses 12 through 16. It says, "At the hands of the apostles, many signs and wonders were taking place among the people. And they were all together in Solomon's portico, but none of the rest dared to associate with them. However, the people held them in high esteem, and increasingly believers in the Lord, large numbers of men and women were being added to their number to such an extent that they even carried the sick out into the streets and laid them on cots and pallets, so that when Peter came by, at least his shadow might fall on any of them. The people from the cities in the vicinity of Jerusalem were coming together as well, bringing people who were sick or tormented with unclean spirits, and they all were being healed." So there's a couple things that stick out here to me. First of all, it's like people had such belief or had seen so many wonderful things that they thought that even just being and Peter's shadow would heal them. And of course, the last line there that really kind of drives it home is says, "And they, some of them were being healed." No, they all were being healed. But we know sometimes today that people who have this certain belief, they generally blame the person who is being healed when it fails. That they didn't have enough faith. But let's read Matthew chapter 17 and verses 19 through 21. It says, then the disciples came to Jesus privately and said, why could we not cast it out? And he said to them, because of your meager faith. For truly I say to you, if you have faith the size of a mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for you. So we see here it wasn't the person who was having the healing done to him, but it's actually the person that is performing this event. That was the disciples in this case. Let's read Acts 9, 32 through 35. And I know we most of us know these stories, but it's good to review them. It says, now in Joppa, there was a disciple named Tabitha, which when translated means Dorcas. This woman was excelling in acts of kindness and charity, which she did habitually. But it happened at that time that she became sick and died. And when they had washed her body, they laid it in an upstairs room. Since Lydda was near Joppa, the disciples, having heard that Peter was there, sent two men to him, urging him, do not delay in coming to us. So Peter got ready and went with them. When he arrived, they brought him into the room upstairs, and all the widows stood beside him, weeping and showing all the tunics and garments that Dorcas used to make while she was with them. But Peter sent them all out, knelt down and prayed, and turning to the body, he said, Tabitha, arise. And she opened her eyes, and when she saw Peter, she sat up, and he gave her his hand and raised her up and called the saints and widows. He presented her alive. It became known all over Joppa, and many believed in the Lord. You know what? I just read the wrong thing. Sorry. We'll have that already read. The correct verse, rather, is Acts 9, 32 through 35. Sorry. Now, as Peter was traveling through all those regions, he also came down to the saints who lived at Lydda. There he found a man named Aeneas, who had been bedridden for 8 years. Because he was paralyzed, Peter said to him, Aeneas, Jesus Christ heals you. Get up and make your own bed. Immediately he got up, and all who lived at Lydda and Sharon saw him, and they turned to the Lord. So I like analyzing things, to kind of take an investigative look. So you can see this man was paralyzed and bedridden for 8 years, and then just got up, not in a few weeks, but got up immediately. Now, I've worked in the hospital probably going on 30 years, and I can tell you I have never seen anybody perform this. And I'm not being funny or cute, I'm just saying I've never seen anybody do this. And if you were able to perform something such as a healing, ain't the hospital where you'd want to be. Especially at children's hospital. I'm there quite often. So there's that. And in fact, I know anybody that's in healthcare or connected can tell you that basically being in a bed a couple of weeks sick, you can hardly get out of the bed, much less being in a bed 8 years and then paralyzed. So this truly was something very miraculous. And I went ahead and read Acts 9, 36 to 42, talking about Dorcas, so we know that story. And sometimes we don't appreciate these stories. If you think about it, she had died. We don't know how long she had died, or she had been dead, before they sent the two men to Peter, to Lydda. And I looked it up. 12 miles there, 12 miles back. They had to find Peter. They were probably traveling by foot. So they find him, bring him back, and he comes there, and he walks in, and he tells her to get up, basically, and she does so again immediately. And just as a side note, I looked it up. If you walk a total of 24 miles, which is what it would have been, even that, by a calculator, if you walk 3 miles an hour, is 8 hours that it would take you just for the walk itself. So again, not these tales you hear where they were dead on the table 2 minutes in the OR, but this person was dead, who knows, maybe a day. We're not sure, but several hours. So again, this shows you how miraculous this was. Just again, in Acts 20, 9 through 12, we won't read that, but it's just a story we know about Eutychus falling three stories, which is 30 feet from a window, and he's dead. And Paul brings him back to life. And one thing we never do really take into account, but in Acts, there's three different jailbreaks. Not that they're trying to break out, but it's miraculously that God allows them to just walk out of these prisons. And that is also in Acts 5, 17 through 25, if you want to jot these down. Acts 12, 5 to 11. And Acts 16, 25 through 30. And this is one of my favorite verses out of this situation, basically, and that's Matthew chapter 10 and verse 1. It says, Jesus summoned his 12 disciples and gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal every disease and every sickness. So once again, in every instance, it was immediate, and every illness and every disease, not just back pain and cancer that where they've been getting some treatments, every illness, every disease, instantly. And just to look up something that me and my coworker talked about, because he was telling me some story about he had heard somebody had been raised from the dead at some church. So if you know me, I looked on the internet and to find if there was any evidence of anybody being raised from the dead in our times. Well, there are several testimonials of people saying that this has occurred. And actually, I found a couple videos from Africa, which looked kind of sketchy to me, but stating that, you know, they had risen somebody from the dead. But that was about it. So as of January the 9th, 2024, there are approximately 3,130 Pentecostal churches just in the United States. So again, I'm an investigator type person. If you claim this is happening with so many churches, it seems like somebody would have some evidence of a certified miracle on their cell phone. That's all I'm saying. You know, everybody's got a phone. Everybody's got a video camera. Let me see it. And I told this guy, you know, let me see it. But again, we have to go back to the very original question. Not the original question, but the thing is, why were these miracles being done in the first place? Let's read Hebrews chapter 2. Verses 3 through 4. It says, how will we escape if we neglect so great a salvation, after it was at first spoken through the Lord, it was confirmed to us by those who heard. God also testifying with them, both by signs and wonders, and by various miracles, and by gifts of the Holy Spirit, according to his own will. So, in a nutshell, as we all know here, it was to confirm the word, plain and simple. We don't need that now. We have the New Testament. So, I hope this little glimpse into just a few of the miracles, of the many miracles listed in the New Testament and the Old Testament, will help you in some way. And just again, remember, somebody starts making claims about something, say, well, let's see that. I'll go with you. Or show me somebody. In fact, and believe it or not, we're still friends, but I'm like, if you know somebody, I said, I got a son. I got a son that's very handicapped. And I said, if you can point me to that direction where somebody can heal him, I'll be at church you attend next Sunday. I'm still waiting. So anyhow, you'll generally see a church with 10 people speaking in tongues, but you'll see nobody healing. And that's just something to think about. So if there's anybody here tonight who needs to know the steps of salvation, I think about everybody here, you know, has our Christians that I'm looking at, but if not, just know that there are steps that you need to know. Or if there is an erring child of God who needs prayer of the church, please come forward as together we stand and sing.